Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 76. My name is John. Every morning, just before breakfast, I don't want no coffee or tea. Just me and good buddy Weiser. That's all I ever need. When someone tells me, "Don't sweat the small stuff," my reply is, "The devil is in the details." What I usually mean by that is, it's the little things that people miss that balloon into big things that really fucks it all up. But there's another meaning for me. Sometimes I can see the chaos and the bullshit of the big picture going on around me and be able to take it in stride. For example, having two atrocious candidates for president from the big government parties. Oh well, it is what it is. But you get something little and insignificant and meaningless, and sometimes it can irritate me and just stick around in my brain. One of my friends posted a meme showing the temporary design change for the Budweiser beer can that's going to be on the market until the presidential election. It replaces the name of the beer with America, and other wording on the can has been replaced with phrases from, like, the Declaration of Independence and Constitution, as well as other traditionally patriotic things. Along with the picture of the can on the meme comes this message: Budweiser has changed its name to America for the summer, because there's nothing more American than an iconic brand selling out to a foreign company than using a false image of patriotism in an effort to make more money. Now, before I offer a little different perspective on this, I want you to understand how ironic this is for me. First off, the friend who posted this is a big Bud Light fan. As long as I've known him, he's had Bud Light at his house and always brings it to any get-together. Second, I hate Budweiser. Period. I have a saying, if Bud is on the label, it doesn't go into me. We had a party at my house once, and a friend brought over a 12-pack of Bud Light and left a few cans behind. They sat in my pantry for months before I decided to use them to boil bratwurst, because I didn't want to use any of my good beer for something like that. Budweiser tastes like cold, carbonated piss. And for all you snarky assholes out there who ask, "Well, how do you know what piss tastes like?" Well, it involves cunnilingus and a woman who pees when she's tickled. And quit asking questions you don't want answers to. I'm sure if I gave it a little thought, I would come up with quite a few companies and products that I care less about than Budweiser Lager and its family of beers. But I can promise you, when it comes to a passion for and advocacy of a company and its products, Anheuser-Busch is very, very far down on the list. However, as I've tried to say many times throughout the past 6 years, you aren't really free unless you advocate for the rights of those you disagree with. Or, at least in this case, I'm defending something I find distasteful. Much of the information I will cite from this point on comes from the DJ Spices article, I apologize if I've mispronounced your name, titled "How the Three-Tiered Beer Distribution System Works," and from the Budweiser entry on Wikipedia. I will be quoting and paraphrasing from both quite a bit during the podcast, especially the Spice article. I'm going to read pieces of the articles and go straight into commentary and mix in commentary as I read. I'm not going to pause and credit every piece from the articles and delineate where I'm doing my commentary and where I am not. What I'm trying to say is, read the articles if you really want to know what came from where. Budweiser is actually a style of beer, brewed in the town of Budweis in Bohemia since the 13th century. Several breweries sold Budweiser beer in the late 1800s in the United States, but the Anheuser-Busch product was so well known, the other breweries stopped producing their Budweis style of beer. Beer producers were flourishing at the turn of the 20th century, but that didn't make a lot of people very happy, and not just because of the anti-German sentiment brought about by the First World War. Before Prohibition, the large breweries had their own saloons. If you wanted a Schlitz, you went to a bar that sold only Schlitz. They provided the saloons not only with beer, but also gave loans for furniture, beer equipment, and other needs. While this might seem like a great way to start a bar, since the bars contractually could only carry the brewery's labels, there was pressure from the breweries to the bars to continually increase beer sales. So by the turn of the century, the pressure pushed the bar patrons to the point of frequent overindulgence. In other words, lots of people were getting drunk. A lot. So much so that many moralists viewed it as an epidemic. And a temperance movement began to battle against what they perceived to be the evil of drinking. See if you notice any parallels with other substances people put into their bodies through various means. The movement slowly and steadily gained strength and allies across a spectrum of ideologies. Soon, influential people were siding with the temperance movement, and they began to reduce the number of drinkers, and then the number of bars, and then the number of breweries. So they were successful in lowering the number of drunken incidents, but that wasn't enough for them. They didn't want to teach temperance, you know, everything in moderation. They wanted their morality enforced on everyone. Their ideology and influence reached the ears of government officials who wanted to be popular and get reelected. So they allied themselves with the temperance movement. But there was a problem. Government got a lot of money from tariffs from the import and export of alcohol. Back then, that was how government raised their revenue, or at least that was one way. There was no way government would ban alcohol and lose that revenue stream. Unless, of course, something came along to replace it. Maybe something like a national income tax. Once the Constitution was altered to allow government to take the rightfully earned wealth of the citizens, alcohol producers found themselves in the crosshairs of government officials seeking to gain and retain power, coupled with a temperance movement viciously seeking to impose their version of morality on an entire nation. On January 16th, 1919, the 18th Amendment of the United States was enacted into law, creating the Prohibition Era, wherein the production, sale, and transportation of alcoholic beverages was made illegal. All legal American brewing came to a halt, only a few breweries, mainly the largest like Anheuser-Busch, were able to stay in business by manufacturing near beer, malt syrup, or other non-alcohol grain products, in addition to soft drinks such as colas and root beers. Production and shipping of alcohol was largely confined to illegal operations that could deliver compact distilled beverages, like smuggled rum and domestic moonshine, more efficiently and reliably than bulkier products such as beer. Just like any other banned substance, a black market was created, and law enforcement wasted time, energy, money, and human life in the pursuit of alcohol manufacturers, retailers, and users. In December of 1933, the 21st Amendment of the United States Constitution repealed prohibition in general, but left the production of alcoholic beverages heavily regulated by federal, state, and local authorities. Included in these regulations was the imposition of a three-tier distribution system, in which a manufacturer of alcoholic beverages must go through a wholesale distributor to sell its product, rather than selling to retailers directly. The new system was put in place in an attempt to make sure the perceived problems before prohibition, such as mass public drunkenness, would not be repeated. The three-tier system requires all beer, and other alcohol in most cases, to pass through a middleman known as the distributor, also called a wholesaler in some states. The distributor does the on-the-ground sales and marketing for the producer, and the distributors sell the beer to retailers. This system means beer producers do not sell directly to bars, liquor stores, or grocery stores. It's the responsibility of the distributor to establish the retail relationship. The distributor is not allowed to purchase shelf space, furnish equipment like draft coolers, offer loans, or other discriminatory promotional pricing. They are supposed to provide all retailers the same pricing. Distributors also maintain refrigerated warehouse to store the beer and fleets of trucks to ship the beer around the states. The original intent of the three-tiered system was to provide temperance, ensure orderly market conditions, and raise revenue in the form of taxes to the various levels of government. The system increases the price of alcohol because there is now a middleman in the form of the distributor, plus the fees and taxes imposed by the government, which is reflected in the price of the retail product. In theory, the higher prices discourage overindulgence and forces temperance on society. Distributors argue that the system benefits small producers. I wonder why the distributors would be arguing in favor of this system. They say if direct sales were allowed, a small brewery would be at a disadvantage. Large retailers like Costco are used to purchasing goods in very large quantities to get the best price possible. Larger breweries would be able to undercut small brewery prices, and only macro beers would be available. Since all brewers are required to go through an independent distributor, they say this levels the playing field for all brewers. One distributor can get many beers into a retail store at once, since there is incentive to provide a diverse selection. The distribution model also benefits retailers, according to the advocates. The distributor reduces inventory costs for the retailer by managing the large portfolio of beers. This is an advantage because beer is a perishable product. The distributor makes sure the retailers are always carrying fresh beer. The three-tier system also provides transparency for taxation. Ah, here's the real reason. The government can easily determine how much alcohol is shipped and to where it is shipped. The distributor often is responsible for collecting the taxes because they can accurately monitor the shipments. This creates a paper trail and protects against gray market sales. If the distribution system goes away, the government will be forced to come up with a new system to collect revenue. Government got exactly what it wanted, handed to them on a silver platter by the moralists in the temperance movement. They took away the right to create alcohol, sell alcohol, and put alcohol into your body if you so choose. Then they give back that right, but only if you agree to their terms of regulation and pay them a tribute for everything manufactured and sold. If you can only do it under somebody else's terms, is it really freedom? I try to do my grocery shopping on either Saturday or Sunday mornings. The closest grocery store to us is one of the largest in the state of Texas. It is owned and operated by HEB. If you live in Texas, you already know that. I call it HE Behemoth because it is so massive. The key is to get there before 9:30 a.m., preferably before 8:30 a.m., because any later than that and you'll be stuck in long checkout lines. I personally prefer to go on Saturdays instead of Sundays for one reason. In the state of Texas, because of old puritanical morality laws, you cannot buy beer from a grocery store before noon on a Sunday. So, let's say it's the NFL regular season, and you want to have your friends over on a Sunday to drink some beer and watch some games. The games start at noon Central Time. You damn well better grab your beer at least a day earlier, or else you're going to be stuck in line at the grocery store at kickoff. Of course, I'd be willing to bet up at AT&T Stadium in Dallas and NRG Stadium in Houston, you could probably grab a shitty Bud Light at 11:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning. It's amazing what power, money, and popularity can do for you. The crappiest part is when I'm walking around on a Sunday morning at HE Behemoth, and the voice periodically comes over the PA system. Attention, HEB shoppers. This is just a friendly reminder that Texas state law prohibits the sale of alcohol before noon on Sunday. I personally find nothing friendly about that reminder. Every once in a while, it gets on my nerves, and I post my irritation on social media. I get likes from my fellow beer-drinking buddies, but people, for the most part, are willing to endure the status quo. There's a liquor store a couple of miles away, struggling to keep up with the big guys in the area like Specs. I like the owner because he tries to bring in beers that nobody else is carrying. One of the times when I dropped in to look around, it was a slow afternoon, so we got into a conversation about his store hours and about how he would prefer to not be open at that time because it's usually pretty slow. But once again, Texas state law has very specific times when a liquor store is allowed to be open for business. If he closes even during the slow times, he risks losing business because he can only be open at specific points. He'd rather open the store later in the day and close the store later in the evening because he knows business will be better. Of course, I went off on a rant. Who the hell is the government to say when a business can and cannot be open? The owner should decide when it is best to be open based on the feedback and patronage of his or her customers. Texas law prohibits any liquor store from being open on a Sunday, and the only way to purchase a bottle of hard liquor in the state of Texas is at a liquor store. So, if I want to buy a fifth of Sam Houston whiskey on a Sunday afternoon, and my friend the liquor store owner wants to be open and sell me a fifth of Sam Houston whiskey on a Sunday afternoon, then we should be allowed to make the transaction, and government should keep its greedy, grubby little fucking nose out of our business. But that's the way government is. They pass all these laws and regulations under the guise of keeping us all temperate. But let's be honest. They only care about keeping us under control and making sure we pay the taxes and fees they want from us as a ransom to keep prohibition from coming back. Where was I? Oh, yeah. While the three-tier system has been in use for over 70 years, it is not without its warts. The three-tier system makes sense in the United States because we've had generations to get used to the programming. But other countries have open and lightly regulated markets. As technology has allowed for a more global market, international producers struggle with the prohibition-era laws. They feel the laws interfere with efficient distribution, unnecessarily inflate beer prices, and are possibly in violation of international free trade agreements. The system is inefficient because everything has to go through a middleman. Many wineries are contesting this system, which they feel was not intended for wine sales. This problem came to a head when some states allowed in-state wineries to sell wine directly to the consumer, but required out-of-state wineries to go through distributors. This is obviously a problem because it violates the Commerce Clause of the Constitution. You cannot pass laws that improperly burden or discriminate against interstate commerce. In 2005, Granholm v. Held, the Supreme Court agreed with the small wineries and forced New York to change their laws. This opened the floodgates, so to speak. As of April 2008, 35 states now permit some form of direct wine sales to the consumer. It only accounts for about 2% of wine sales in the United States, but there is huge opportunity in this freer market. The distributors see this as a direct challenge to their place in alcohol commerce. Craft breweries would love this access to the consumer, and some states are starting to permit it in small quantities. If everybody can sell directly to the consumer, there's no need for the distributors. And you better believe the distributors are lobbying heavily against it. Since there is a middleman in the system, the cost of beer in America is higher. There's a whole industry between the producer and consumer that employs over 92,000 jobs and generates almost $8 billion annually. The added costs are passed to the consumer by design. The original intent of this system was to discourage overindulgence, but now it just makes our beer cost more. Oh yeah, and it might violate trade treaties. Budweiser dominates in world sales and was the number one selling beer in the world until recently. Part of the reason for their success is it is much easier for Budweiser to penetrate foreign markets than it is for foreign beers to penetrate the American market. Remember the meme that I mentioned at the beginning that maligned Budweiser for selling to a foreign company? The most likely reason that foreign company, InBev, pursued the purchase of Budweiser was to gain better access to the distributors, not for the great taste of Budweiser, but to get access to a market with stupid government barricades that make American markets less free than the rest of the Western world. international producers are challenging the three-tier system, and the EU has requested the United States conform our distribution system with the requirements of the General Agreement of Trade and Services. If the American laws are not liberalized, the World Trade Organization may force the issue. By treaty, the WTO does have the authority to challenge and possibly dismantle the distribution system. Another big problem with the distribution model is the abuses before prohibition are just moved to the distributors. Corruption now exists at the distributor level. Powerful distributors determine which beers make it to the shelves. For example, Bill's Brewery in Michigan gave up trying to penetrate the Chicago market and pulled out of Illinois completely. A small brewery has no chance of reaching the Chicago market. In fact, while craft breweries flourish across America, very few craft breweries exist in Chicago. They just can't get their beer to market. A brewery called Two Brothers, founded by Jim and Jason Abel, split their efforts to save their brewery. Jim kept the brewery, and Jason formed Windy City Distribution to distribute the beer. Even then, it took many years for any retailer to take them seriously. The smaller distributors, especially in Chicago, are getting squeezed out of the business because the larger distributors are now offering illegal perks. It could be as simple as running an extra tap line to try out a new beer, or installing entire tap systems costing thousands of dollars. Retailers in Chicago are even requesting freebies since the practice is so commonplace. It's illegal, but in most cases it's overlooked. The distributors are employing the same tactics the breweries used before Prohibition. The original intent of a neutral middle party is long gone as well. The macro breweries may not own the distribution channels, but they might as well claim ownership. Distributors align themselves so much with big brewers, they even identify as an Anheuser-Busch distributor or a Miller distributor. In 1997, Anheuser-Busch had their distributors sign an exclusivity incentive program, which didn't require the distributor to carry only Anheuser-Busch products, but gave huge benefits if they did drop all competitors. It even offered lines of credit and cash to those distributors joining the program. This is exactly what the breweries were doing to bars before Prohibition. When the demand for craft beers took off, the distributors rebelled, and Anheuser-Busch relented. The U.S. Justice Department launched an antitrust investigation of these practices in 1998, but closed the investigation the same year without doing anything. There isn't anything to stop Anheuser-Busch, now known as InBev, from trying again when market conditions are favorable for them. So, what do we have here? We have a company who operated their business in a successful manner. But some people felt that operation was immoral. So the moralists used the force of government to regulate the company to conform to their idea of right and wrong. Of course, this forces the company to find a revenue stream completely outside of their main product, because now their main product is banned nationwide. Miraculously, as other former competitors are closing their doors for good, this company manages to get by until the destructive regulations are lessened. But wait, you say, the regulations weren't lessened, they were removed. Prohibition was repealed. Not so fast. Government took away Anheuser-Busch's and other breweries' right to produce beer for 13 years, but they only gave that right back if all the breweries agreed to the new three-tiered system of regulation and taxation. pre-prohibition saw a perceived corruption by the moralists. Post-prohibition merely transferred and legitimized that corruption as it was now backed by federal law, and more importantly, by federal inaction. So Anheuser-Busch and the other breweries did not win their freedom back to make beer. They have been paying a ransom for nearly a century to keep the government from shutting them down. Or to be more specific, the customer has been paying the ransom. Because, as any reasonable business would, they pass the cost of operating their business to consumers. But the regulation of the United States makes it too difficult to do business on a worldwide scale. So they sell out to foreign interests who can import and export products to markets that were too difficult to reach as a United States corporation because of United States laws. So the creator of the meme is right, just not in the way he thinks. Anheuser-Busch really is the epitome of the all-American corporation. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.